you. Next item.
Item number 12, from the manager of the Employees Retirement System, Department of Human Resources, requesting authorization to amend Section 201.24, Sub 311 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances to clarify the criteria of terminated employee contribution refunds, allow additional time to make informed decisions, and ease the administrative process by the Employees Retirement System. This item was also referred to the Pension Study Commission and the Pension Board on October 31st, 2013. This item was laid over for one meeting.
Go ahead, Mr. Hanchett.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I'm Matt Hanchett. I'm the Director of Employee Benefits. I really have very little to add from the prior meeting other than I welcome any questions and I'm happy to address them for the committee.
If you can just refresh the committee's memory on what the issues were when we last met?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. The short version of it is that we implemented the participant accounts in accordance with the mandatory pension contribution. We did so, we put in a rule, basically a very concrete rule that employees had 60 days from termination to request a distribution of their contributions to the fund. By doing so, they're basically waiving any right to a future pension benefit, but they're getting back the money that they put in. What we found in practice is that one, the 60-day window is very challenging for us from a standpoint that a lot of times it just does not provide our former employees with adequate time to make an informed decision about what to do with these funds. It closes the window on them much too quickly for us to be able to give them a fair chance to make that informed decision. And the other issue that it has is it has no remedy for us for any kind of exigent circumstances that come up that inevitably happen over the course of administering it. What we're asking for in the original recommendation was extending that to 180 days in order to give employees time to make those decisions and also to institute facing an appeal process. We're dealing with those one-off situations. The other item that was a bit of a point of contention, and I believe that's why we laid it over, was that we were recommending limiting this to limiting the ability to receive a payout only to non-vested employees. And in response to that question, we submitted to the committee the alternatives that were available, and I'm happy to address any of those as well as Mr. Gray.
Do you want to walk through the alternatives quickly?
Mr. Chairman, the alternatives were submitted informally. They are not in Legistar. They are not before the committee. And so a couple of supervisors asked that we share them, and so those were done. They are not in the public record at this point. Frankly, it'll get more confusing if I walk through them unless somebody can tell me what they might be interested in changing. And then I can.
Supervisor Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt item 12.
We have a motion, Supervisor Lipscomb.
For Mr. Grady, you refresh my memory. I believe it was option 3, was an alternative that extended the timeline, but made no other changes. Was that seemed to be the least sort of the least confusing of the options. Didn't all the other options involve changes that might require an actuarial analysis, potentially even including this, the one that's in front of us? Or
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Lipscomb, first, as to the one before you, we have the actuarial analysis for both pieces of this. That is, the change in the time frame, the procedural change, report saying that's no actuarial effect, and a letter which, frankly, was received yesterday from the actuary saying that eliminating the ability of vested members to get a refund also has an immaterial or no actuarial effect. So we'll have that, if this is a proposal that moves forward, we'll have that for the Pension Study Commission when they schedule their meeting. In response to your question about alternatives, one of the alternatives basically makes the procedural change to give employees more time to make the request. and makes no other changes, which therefore would allow both vested and non-vested members to request refunds as they are presently able to do. So it would just continue the current situation. And so if that's what you're interested in doing, that would not have any more actual effect, any different actual effect than the one that's before you on the procedure. And it would preserve the status quo with respect to who can ask for refunds, basically anybody. And so if you're interested in that, we have a version that could be shared as an amendment or a substitute. It would have to be, this item would have to be probably temporarily laid over to do that.
I guess I'd like to hear from other members that I would, if there's interest in it, I would like to, I would be interested in that option, because I haven't heard the case for why we should limit it beyond what's already an option for people. And I do think it brings into this question again of what was someone's understanding of what was available to them. And so if today you have the ability, vested or not vested, to request the refund, and we make that change, don't we open ourselves up to this whole issue again of you know, we've essentially changed the contract, and then we're gonna create another two class system, I guess, of going forward, new employees don't have that right, but everyone before today has it. It just seems like that's more complicated than it needs to be. And unless there's something I haven't heard about what the advantage, which, you know, it sounds like there's no actuarial advantage to that, I'm not understanding why we would make that change. I understand the 180-day change. I understand the appeal change, but I don't understand that third element. And I'm sorry that I wasn't ready with the amendment. Mr. Grady did circulate those options. I was under the impression that this item was on Monday for some reason. I thought I had time to do that. So confusion.
Mr. Grady?
Mr. Chairman, just try and be brief. In response to Supervisor Lipscomb's questions or points, this really has become an issue of significance only with the institution of the mandatory contributions in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Before that, it really was not. I mean, we had refunds of unique membership accounts, but this is where it's now. There's much more money. Everyone's involved with making pension contributions, not just a few people. And so the ground has changed in the last 2 years. I think the idea behind the elimination of the refunds for vested members is to, frankly, try and avoid having employees make decisions that may not be the right decisions for them. Now, sometimes it might be in certain circumstances, but the concern was that the fund acts as a fiduciary to the fund and to the members, and so there's a concern that if you let people make a choice, some people are going to make the wrong choice. And so maybe this goes too far the other way by not letting anybody make the choice. And so I don't think, and I guess Mr. Hanjik's the policy person, not me, but I don't think the administration had, you know, this dug-in-the-ground interest in that piece of the proposal. The real generation for this proposal is the procedural piece of getting more time for employees to make the decision and for the ability for the board to grant exceptions for people who don't comply with the 180 days in circumstances where the employee can justify that noncompliance. So if Supervisor Lipscomb, last point Supervisor Lipscomb makes is respect to a legal point, which I don't want to get into a lot in open session, but it's not a it's a fair point.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the only thing I would add to Mr. Grady's comment is that from my perspective, in terms of administering the plan, the two most important things are that we have the 180 days and that we have the ability to dispense with some of these kind of one-off extra circumstances. The least material item from my perspective is the whether or not we offer it to both vested and non-vested. I would have no issues.
One of the issues that I remember came up, and just I'm trying to completely understand this myself, was now in this era of mandatory contribution, if someone leaves service and passes away before they're eligible for a pension, what happens to the money they've contributed now?
It stays in the fund.
It's gone. And that was sort of one of the issues that I think that I wanted to see addressed. I mean, because, as you said, the field has changed a little bit. In the past, the county provided all the money for the pension, and that was part of the formula. Some people get it, some people don't. So now you're taking money out of everybody's check. This person leaves at age 40, has maybe worked for the county 15 years, has put in X amount of dollars of their money, and they pass away at 50, and that their money is gone. And I think one alternative we had talked about was maybe letting their estate get the money that they've contributed. I mean, I think that's a reasonable option and would be, I think, very rare, but would be fair to those few individuals. But, so, I mean, I wouldn't mind laying this over till later and discussing that or whatever, but. Am I making my question clear? And
no, and Mr. Chairman, that was part of the other two alternatives that
right.
I shared, was to make a payment to the estate in that situation.
Yeah.
We don't have an actual report directly addressing that, but the conversations I've had with the actuary, consistent with the report that we did receive yesterday, is that basically this refund question, his view was whichever way you go doesn't have an actual effect. And so whether you continue to allow refunds to vested members or you don't do that, he saw that as actuarially immaterial. I'm assuming the same conclusion would apply to a payment to an estate in the situation you just talked about. I don't have a report stating that, but I'm assuming it would be that case.
I think a lot of this revolves around the issue of informed decision, the underlining of informed. I have no objection to the policy here. My question went around how does a departing employee make an informed decision? I don't think we have to be paternalistic about the decision they make. I think the employee should make whatever decision they're going to make. But the question about informed, how does the employee know? Are we off?
No.
Go ahead.
How does the employee get the information to make an informed decision?
Right.
And the other comment I would make would be about the estate issue. Because I do think when someone is receiving wages, and some of those wages are being taken to pay towards a pension, even if that person dies, in an estate proceeding, there is a time limit for filing of claims. So your estate proceeding will cut that off, and it's not going to be a long tail. But I do think there should be a right to have an estate claim the wages that were taken for the pension contribution, especially in those cases where it never vested. I mean, if it's vested, I think it might be a little different issue. But those are my two questions on this.
Chairman, supervisors, to address the issue of the informed decision, it does somewhat depend on how someone is leaving the organization. If someone is retiring, they meet with a pension counselor, a retirement counselor, walks them through all of their options, one of which would be to take the distribution of their funds, and they're advised of all the consequences of each of those decisions, both on them and any future benefit as far as eligibility for health care or so on. If someone leaves the organization and they're not retired, they wouldn't necessarily have a retirement counseling session, but they would receive a letter from ERS advising them of their right to take the distribution and the consequences of it. What we would be looking to do after moving forward with this would be to expand upon that with the request form on the distribution. I think Mr. Grady can give a little more detail about that than I can.
And how quickly does that RS letter go out? I mean, I can support the timelines you have here if I know information is being shared.
That's part of the challenge with the 60 days, and frankly, that's part of why I'm asking to extend it, is that ERS cannot send that letter until they know someone is terminated, and depending on the circumstances of someone's end of employment, they may not even receive notice of that change as it flows through the entire termination process from department to HR to ultimately the end game of ERS until a couple weeks into that 60-day window, and it's really cutting it too close by the time that the letters get out. And that's ultimately why I'd like to see this move to 180 days.
Okay, and so I can definitely support that. My information is then that they are getting the information, so they're making an informed decision. 180 days will accomplish that. And to the estate claim, this is not going to include the estate claim?
As drafted now, it does not include that.
I have a concern about that because that is monies that were paid, and just because the person dies. If you're concerned about the tail, you know, how long does that then remain out there? The probate proceeding will cut that off. So I think including the estate claim is a reasonable thing for us to do.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe the concern with that proposal or that concept is a tail. It's really just an administrative issue because once somebody's left, in Chairman Cohen's example, they left at age 40. Now they're age 55 and they die. We don't keep track of those folks. They're gone. They've been gone for 15 years. They could have moved anywhere. We do check death files like the Social Security Administration does as well for members. And so we do have that method, but it's not as easy and obvious as an active member. And so it's an administrative issue. I'm not saying it can't be done, but that's the issue.
Yeah, but on your scenario, if the person didn't die till quite a bit later, they would have had the kind of letter that Matt was talking about. So I think we've taken care of that. I'm more concerned about the situation where the person dies either during employment but they didn't vest or shortly after leaving. I think it's still reasonable for the same time period to permit the estate to have a claim.
With respect to someone who dies during employment, it is different. In that situation, either they're going to get a survivor benefit to a spouse or children, or they're going to get a refund. So an active employee who dies is treated differently than someone who leaves here.
There's survivor benefits for non-vested claims?
Yes.
You sure?
You thought he was
Well,
sure.
I'm always sorry. I'm trying to remember, and I guess maybe I should be hesitant. I was going to say it requires a year of service, but I would have to double check. But
if we wanted to include the estate,
but certainly regardless,
this does not do that.
Regardless of survivor benefits, there is a provision for refunds for active employees who die. I do know that if no other benefit is payable, so let's assume no survivor benefit is payable because they don't have a spouse, they don't have children, they have not named a beneficiary. Whatever, there's no other benefit payable, then there is a provision for an active employee to receive a refund of their contributions. That's different than the situation of someone who terminates employment without retiring, leaves to go to work for somebody else or whatever, and then dies before they start their pension. In that situation, yes, they would have received a letter at termination from the retirement office saying, you have contributions, you can get a refund. If this passes, you can make the request within 180 days. And of this letter, and if you want to do that, you should know, and the form they're going to sign is going to say, by doing this, you're giving up any and all pension rights in the system.
Right.
It's informed to that extent. Now, it's not informed in the sense that we, the county, sit down and say, this are the pros and these are the cons to doing it. They have to seek their own financial counsel for that.
Yeah.
But it's informing them of the consequences of the decision.
Yeah, and I would just like, I mean, while that time period is ripe, I think if the person dies, the estate should step into that ability to make the claim. Once the time period's gone and informed, you know, letters were sent out, I think we're okay.
Okay.
I just don't like the idea of cutting this off if someone dies.
Yeah.
Maybe we should. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Mr. Chair, well, I would move to temporarily lay it over. I do want to offer one of the alternatives that Corp Counsel had drafted. Titled version 3. It essentially would make the administrative changes that the department is asking for without changing the terms.
I too want to publicly acknowledge that Mr. Grady did, after our last meeting, did send out some alternatives that I did look at and then didn't really pursue. So he did his job. So in getting the information that we requested, Ms. Mitchell. I would hope we could do it today.
Yep. It's already been drafted, so it's a matter of we've got to get
this in. Just on that point, it still requires pension study. Whatever you adopt today requires pension study commission. We've reached out to Supervisor Mayo to try and schedule that. Okay.
So is there any objection to temporarily laying this item over until later in the meeting? If not, then we'll do that.